south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, as luck would have it, expat Eddie has surfaced again. This time he called me and said, "Guess what, Johnny? I went to court." Yep, that happens sometimes to gringos, so then what? Let me redirect this story for a second and tell you that my sister's a dentist up in Chicago, and she pays something like $30,000 to $40,000 a year in malpractice insurance. Nope, we're not talking about brain surgery here, we're talking about dentistry. She said that when she first started practicing, probably like 20 years ago now, her malpractice insurance was around $10,000 a year. And she said she gets sued about twice a year, no matter what. You can count on it, she says. So, is she a bad dentist? Nope. In fact, she gets listed in publications year over year as one of the top 10 dentists in the Midwest. And as it turns out, she says every dentist seems to get sued at least twice a year. And funny enough, 95% of the claimants want around $5,000 to $10,000, but they'll almost always settle out of court for $5,000. That way, the insurance company figures they'll just pay off no matter what, because it will cost way more than that just to send a lawyer or two to court for a couple of appearances. So she says there's kind of a nationwide racket suing for small amounts because they know you'll settle. Now, when you settle, it makes it appear as if you're guilty, right? But in the settlement agreements, she says, you don't admit to anything. You just sign a no-fault agreement. Now, she says it turns out every state has a dental review board who publish a yearly or quarterly report listing the dentists who've been disciplined by the dental review board and those who have lost cases in court. And though she says practically everyone gets sued, sometimes multiple times a year, the number of dentists on the disciplinary list is tiny. In other words, if you settle out of court, you don't show up on that list. Now, every state in the U.S. has a physician disciplinary board, too. And they also publish a yearly or quarterly list of physicians and specialists who've been disciplined or ended up in court. Now, like I mentioned before, down here in Latin America, that kind of stuff just doesn't exist. It's totally buyer beware. So is that bad or good for the public? Well, definitely for the Latin public who don't investigate much of anything, it's like rolling the dice. But for most astute, intelligent expats with a brain, well, it's due diligence, asking a few of the right questions, and make your selections from there. You could check back in the archives for shows on that, and some of my rants on how to properly select medical, dental, and other professionals. Anyway, as mentioned, in the States, the medical insurance business had turned into a racket. In that example, a dentist will pay out $30,000 or $40,000 a year in insurance premiums, while the insurance company pays $5,000 or $10,000 out each year in frivolous claims, which never make it to court because the number they're asking is just a little too low to make it worthwhile to go to court. So who makes out? The scammer and the insurance company, of course. So up in the first world, since there's so much insurance and so many deep pockets, there are a lot of dirtbags out there who know the angles and make a life out of suing people. In fact, I remember a long time ago when I was in undergraduate engineering school, I worked as a stock boy nights and weekends at one of those Kohl's food stores. Yep, those were the days when school loans were scarce and people actually worked their way through college. Anyway, I remember sometimes the manager would come up to me and say, "Hey, Johnny, keep a close eye on that guy. He's Sue crazy." Yep, at our particular store, and I guess at every big store, there were two or three dirtbags that would fall in the parking lot or slip in the produce aisle and sue the place. So even back then, before surveillance cameras a couple of decades ago, dirtbags were figuring out the scam. Yep, that was then, but now it's much, much worse. I'm sure you've all heard many stories like that. So, what about down here in Latin America? You've heard me say many times it's not a litigious society. Always did have trouble with that word. All right, but what about lag time? Eventually, everything first world comes to Latin America, right? Well, thankfully, there's barely a trace of that. Not yet, anyway. And ambulance chasers? Forget about it. At least not south of Mexico. In fact, if you actually feel like suing somebody and you go to a lawyer, 10 to 1, they'll try to talk you out of it. Why? The judicial branch of Latin government is full of lazy, fat-ass government slugs Therefore, every little step along the way is painfully slow, meaning even the simplest of law cases sometimes can drag on for years. All right, let's talk about some real situations that happen quite a bit. Now, this stuff was related to me by a guy I know who works in the credit department of a big Latin bank. He says these things often go down like this. A guy's got a decent job, a good line of credit, and for the first time in his life, he finds out he can buy a new car on time. By the way, that's how 95% of new cars are bought here in Latin America, on credit. Now, he's got a 5 or even a 7 or 8 year loan, and somewhere along the way, the guy gets in financial trouble and quits making the payments. So first thing they'll do is they'll start mailing out the letters. 3, 4, 5 months will go by. They'll tell him he has to bring the car back. And if he doesn't, they'll threaten a repo man will come and get it. But first, they'll try to garnish his wages because, after all, he has credit and he works somewhere. Now, to get a garnishment, you have to go to court. And just to get on the court schedule, that could take some months. But suppose that's why he's not paying the car off, because he lost his job. And suppose they do send people over to his house to recover the car, and it's not there because maybe he's moved to another city. Who knows? Well, next, the loan company will try to get the guy in court. Could be 6, even 9 months have gone by since he's made a payment, yet he's still got the car and driving it. So then what about the repo man? Remember, people who can afford a brand new car will probably live in gated, guarded communities. So if someone comes, for example, with a court order to repo the car or whatever, the guard is not going to let that guy into your subdivision unless you give him permission. Same thing if you've got your car in a guarded parking lot, which is always a good idea, by the way. I almost never recommend parking on the street. However, there are exceptions, but you knew that already, right? So anyway, bottom line is that Latin America is not a culture of people who carry insurance, for one thing. Only the deep pockets do. Or I should say, only a small percentage of deep pockets do. Remember how I mentioned that less than 5% of car drivers carry any kind of insurance at all. Less than 5%. On top of that, less than 5% of Latins have any kind of health insurance. Except, of course, for that big putrid safety net they call the national healthcare system, which is beyond horrid and inadequate, but you knew that already. On top of that, less than 1% of Latin families have any kind of umbrella homeowner coverage on their properties, houses, businesses, whatever. So if you're in a mom-and-pop hardware store, the floor is wet, you slip and fall and bust your gold grill, the owner and the workers are going to rush over and help you up as nice and polite as they can be, but there's no one to sue. In fact, it's not on anyone's mind, except for people who grew up in litigious cultures. There's that word again, like first world gringos. Though, I have to admit, if it happens in a restaurant, you might get a free sponge cake dessert out of it, or a driveway chicken dinner. Maybe. Of course, there are first world franchises down here, like McDonald's and Kentucky Fried and Starbucks, etc. If you fall down in one of those joints, you probably could sue, but I've never heard of such a case, not even a rumor. So there's none of this. Let's fall down in the McDonald's parking lot, get a big settlement, and live happily ever after on someone else's money. Instead, down here, the burden's on you. You're the doofus. You're the dummy who wasn't looking out, not the store owner. Yep, you gotta love it here in Latin America. That's the way it was back in the States in the 50s and 60s, wasn't it? So anyway, the other day, I got a call from expat Eddie. He had to go to court, which might seem strange after I said that Latin culture is basically gun-shy when it comes to lawsuits. Nevertheless, expat Eddie went to court. Where else? In El Salvador, where he lives. Fact is, a young Latin lady filed an assault charge against him. Whoa. Sounds bad, huh? Well, here's how it went down. Eddie was visiting one of his sushi bars in a medium to high-end mall in San Salvador. That's the capital and largest city of El Salvador. And after the restaurant closed, he and the manager went and had a couple of drinks in a bar/disco in the same mall. Well, as it turns out, the bar closed at 1, but you know how people hang around. And Eddie and his buddy were having a good old time sitting at the bar. Now, at the same time, two kind of good-looking, glittered-out disco chicks in very high heels had been sitting in the two seats next to Eddie and his friend. Now, Eddie, sitting on his bar stool, had his back to these ladies. He was talking to the manager, so they had no real conversations with the ladies at all. Soon enough, it was 1:30, a half hour after the bar had closed, and the place was still really crowded. And just a few minutes later, the lights went up, and the bartenders yelled, "Bar time! Everybody out!" So people started shuffling towards the door and others got off their bar stools. And that's when Eddie's manager buddy saw out of the corner of his eye, one of the glitter chicks put her little purse on top of a $20 bill Eddie left as a tip for the bartender. She slid off her chair and started to leave with her friend when Eddie's buddy said, "Hey, she's stealing the tip." And Eddie whipped around, grabbed her arm, took the money while he scolded her. Her purse got caught on the chair. She slipped and fell on the floor. When she hit the ground, she screamed. Then the bartenders and the bouncers came over. There were two rent-a-cops standing outside the place in the mall. They rushed in and started asking questions. The girl said Eddie attacked her, and he said she stole his money. They took down a few names, and that was it. Everyone went home. Now, I'm sorry if I'm making this seem as if it happened just yesterday. In fact, this happened 9 months ago. And of course, since nothing came of it, out of sight, out of mind, and no one ever thought about it or discussed it again. Until 9 months later. When a little guy on a motorcycle pulled up to Eddie's subdivision and dropped off a document at the guard shack. You see, this girl had found herself a lawyer, and she filed a suit against Eddie, claiming he assaulted her. And so, there was a court date. And of course, like any astute gringo, Eddie has a lawyer. So, a week before the appearance in court, her lawyer called Eddie's lawyer. What do you think? Trying to settle out of court for some dough. And Eddie said, "No way, this is extortion. Let's go to court." She didn't expect that. Remember, down here, almost everything is settled out of court. So, 9 months after the fact, they ended up in court. They both told their stories, and then the judge looked at Eddie. He said, "Mr. Eddie, this lady has accused you of physical abuse. And you know, we've got a lot of witnesses and a photo of her laying on the floor of the bar." Then he said, "I've just one question for you, Mr. Eddie. Were you drunk at the time?" He said, "Judge, at 1:30 in the morning, sitting on a bar stool, isn't everybody?" And the judge said, "Case dismissed." Then the judge said, "Mr. Eddie, you know, you're the owner of a familiar chain of restaurants, right? You know, you shouldn't allow yourself to get in such predicaments. I don't want to see you in here again." But the judge scolded the girl, too, for trying to steal the tip. But he also said something Eddie said he'll never forget. He said, "Mr. Eddie, you're a gringo. Don't you know the higher a monkey climbs, the easier it is to pull his tail?" Then Eddie, always good with a quip, he said, "But Judge, it's hard for a gringo to blend in with the rest of the monkeys." So there you have it. Somewhere along the way, she figured out or someone told her that Eddie had a deep pocket. So then, what's the lesson here? Low profile, repeat, low profile. Don't stick out, try to blend in, and you'll be just fine. In fact, Eddie's been down in Latin America 15 or so years now, and even as an owner of multiple businesses, this is the very first time he's ever been in court. As opposed to a high school buddy of mine up in Chicago who owns a bar and restaurant up there now, he tells me he gets sued a couple times a year too. And he pays about $25,000 a year right now for his umbrella insurance policy on that business, which partly explains why things are much cheaper down here. Most businesses don't carry insurance, so they don't have to pass that extra cost on to their customers. Which brings us to an email, comes from Mr. B. He says, "Johnny, I've listened to tons of your podcasts now, but there's just so much information I can't remember it all. Aside from that, you said in a recent show you shouldn't pay people until the job is complete. Does that also include the lawyers and the expat concierge people you might recommend?" Okay, I'll comment on these things as we go along. As far as paying anyone down here in Latin America, when it comes to professional services like doctors or legal services or even the expat concierge ladies or drivers or tour guides for that matter, obviously they're going to have some expenses up front, so they'll normally want a deposit. Like, for example, a lawyer, I'd say give them 50% up front and tell them you'll give them the rest when the project or whatever is finished. However, if it's a long, drawn-out process, like, for example, residency, which can take up to a year to get your final residency card called the DPI, remember that? The fact is, he might want all his money by the time you've signed all the paperwork and you're just waiting for the final printed documents, which at that point are totally in the hands of the government, not in your lawyer's hands. Nevertheless, I've always found that since this is the land of mañana time, if you hold back, let's say even 10% from someone, contractor, lawyer, anyone, things do move faster because, you know, people want their money, right? And when it comes to anyone who might be helping you out with your plan B, for example, the expat concierge ladies, they're the ones who are going to help you with all your bullet points on your plan B to-do list. Well, you can either pay them on a daily basis, that is, pay them up on the end of each day, or if you've hired them for 5 days or a week, I'd say you'd give them half up front because they're going to have some expenses, you know, gas, car, phone, making stops, running around before you even get down and use their services. They always do some pre-trip planning, sometimes weeks ahead. So whether you're dealing with a guy who's going to build you a garage or a breezeway, or you're going to hire someone to take you around to execute various checkpoints on your plan B list, I personally would give a 50% deposit and the rest on completion of the job. And as for lawyers, well, give them a deposit and maybe pay them a little along the way, but hold back 10% till the end. Remember, this is Latin America and everything's quite flexible. And in fact, it seems every Latin I know is on multiple payment plans for this and that. So why not ask for a payment plan too? Of course, I've been down here a long, long time and I have my own way of doing things. I was screwed and ripped off here and there in the early days. Most gringos are. But I like to think I'm smarter now. However, you're going to have to make your own deals when you get down here, so don't go saying Johnny said this and Johnny said that, because they might not know who Johnny is. And you know what? If they don't like it, just say, well, I'll go to another lawyer or another tourist agency or another Spanish school, whatever. Now, for some services, you're probably going to have to pay the whole thing up front. For example, if you're going to live with a Spanish immersion family for a week or however long you're going to stay there, you'll always have to pay them ahead for the upcoming week. Of course, if you're looking for the best deal possible, always ask what kind of deal you can get if you pay up well into the future. However, some Latin immersion families have been burned because although gringo backpacker types have good intentions, many of them can't stand the setup after a few days and they just bug out. So practically every Spanish immersion family has been left holding the bag and they won't let that happen again. Therefore, they want their money up front. And there's another reason. Latin families are always on the edge. They never have any reserve. They don't have money in the bank. Sound familiar? And if you don't pay your immersion family's fee up front, that could mean the difference between having rice, frijoles, and tang every night versus roast beef, turkey, or pork, and a nice big bowl of chicken feet soup. Yum. So in the end, you'll have to make the deals yourself. Everything's negotiable here in Latin America. And the classic example of that is renting a place and paying 6 months or a year ahead. Now, as mentioned in past shows, that's virtually unheard of with the Latin crowd. Talk about cutting a deal. I've seen some tremendous deals cut that way. All right, let's move on with Mr. B's email. He asks, in Latin America, specifically Guatemala, will it be cheaper to buy an American car or a foreign car? I would imagine most parts are made in China. What's the scoop on that? Well, Mr. B, you've got plenty of both types down here. And you're right, most things are made in China, so when you buy an American car, you're really buying a foreign car, aren't you? At least most of it. Now, here in Latin America, Mexico, Argentina, and Brazil have car manufacturing plants. Toyota, Honda, Ford, BMW, a lot of them. And you see, if you buy a new car down here that's made locally, let's say you're in Mexico and you buy a Ford, it will be slightly less expensive than a Ford that sat the same dealership that was produced in the States, you know, because of tariffs and shipping charges and all that. But there really is no hard and fast rule, especially with used cars, except for the fact that any car that's driven down from the States and retitled is always going to be a little bit cheaper than the very same car model and year purchased at a Latin car dealership when new. And in past shows, I went through that whole deal about how people buy wrecked, junked, or scrapped cars up in the States at auction, and they can often look really nice, sometimes almost perfect. Then once they're down here and repaired, they're in direct competition with the very same cars that were bought new at the dealership. And because they were bought so cheaply at auction and repaired here in Latin America, the sellers get a lot less dough in a car like that. So they can go at a 10 or 20% discount to Blue Book. So, for example, two identical 2010 Ford Explorers, one bought originally in Latin America from a dealer, and the other driven down from the States, well, the one from the States will go for a grand or two less. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, I have to admit that there seems to be a big glut of used cars here in Latin America right now. The one big reason is that car repair shops in Latin America can now buy junked and trash cars right on the internet. Now, previously, a buyer had to actually go up to the States. That means his papers had to be in order. He had to be legal, hang around the auction, buy the cars one by one, arrange for them to be shipped back, etc., etc. And now you could see the cars live online, put in your bid, do the deal in a couple of minutes. So loads of cars from the States are coming down. Not only that, there's been a massive growth in credit and bank loans. Sound familiar? So now even used car dealers are offering loans. Of course, at nastily high interest rates, if that's a word. And 5 years ago or so, it was difficult to get a loan for anything. Now, all of a sudden, you can pay for almost anything on time. TVs, refrigerators, cell phones, furniture. In fact, the other day I was walking past a furniture store and they had a chair in the window. And the sign said, sale, $15. By the way, sale in Spanish is oferta. Looks like the word offer, oferta. Though sometimes because of the gringo influence, they'll have that word sale, S-A-L-E. But since most Latins don't know that word in English, they revert to the Spanish definition of that word, which is sale, S-A-L-E, which means get out of here. Oh man, only in Latin America, huh? So the sign said sale or get out of here, $15. And right under that it said or 12 payments of $1.50 a month. I'm not kidding you. $1.50 a month. Nope, that's not at all unusual either. And you'll see items as low as $10 being offered on the payment plan for a year or more. So that kind of credit is a very new thing here in Latin America. And everybody, I mean everybody's taking advantage of it. Which brings us back to the glut of used cars here in Latin America. People suddenly have credit where they didn't have it before, and that's a big force driving the used car market too. Bad pun, huh? And gringos do ask me all the time, what's the cheapest car you can buy down here and feel comfortable that it's going to last or not fall apart on you? Well, how about this? A couple of years back, expat Eddie bought a Toyota Corolla station wagon. I'd say it was 12 or 15 years old, maybe, for $750. It was pretty beat up on the outside, about 140,000 kilometers on it. And you know, the average Japanese car can make it to around 300,000 kilometers, which is 200,000 miles. So there still was some life in that old beast. But it had a blown clutch. Yep, there still are a lot of stick shifts down here in Latin America, especially in the older cars. I'd say 60 to 70% of the cars are stick shift. Now, you know, stick shifts are a little cheaper than automatics. They get a little better mileage and they're easier to repair. Can you drive a stick? By the way, when you're looking at ads advertising cars, when it says automático, of course, that's an automatic transmission. And if it says mecánico, that's a mechanical or stick shift. So Eddie bought the car even though it didn't move. The clutch was blown. However, the motor was in great condition. So when you're buying a used car, always make sure the engine sounds good. The pistons aren't knocking. There's no vibration or rattling. And most of all, it's not burning oil. So anyway, Eddie dropped another $200 into that Corolla and had himself a car that he still uses to haul crap around from restaurant to restaurant. So yes, you can get a decent car that's not going to look so nice, that's for sure, for around $1,000. So if all you care about is dependable transportation, you will find a lot of cars like that. However, they won't be pretty. In fact, you'll find most American women, that is gringas, will look at a car like that and say, I'm not riding in that piece of crap. At least that's what my sisters would say. However, if you're moving on up and you want to buy a car that's not all banged and bashed, you know, with seats that aren't all stained and munged, and the women gringa folk won't feel embarrassed riding in, you're probably going to have to drop at least $3,000 or $4,000. That would be the starting point, minimum, to keep those first world ladies happy. Oh, and by the way, as far as Latinas, the Latin women, I'd say 95% of them won't be embarrassed at all to drive in whatever vehicle you have, since anything's better than riding in the chicken bus. However, there's always that 2 to 5% of gringo wannabes whose wealthier daddies have nice cars and stuff, so they might crinkle their noses at such cars. But to the other 95% of the Latin population, man, wheels is wheels. Yep, it's another world down here, but you gotta love it. But we're not done. Mr. B has another interesting question. Johnny, do rentals come with stoves or refrigerators? When I was in Panama, we had to buy our own. Well, Mr. B, yes, it's true. Basically, 95% of all rentals come just with the kitchen sink. You have to bring in all your own appliances. Unless, of course, you rent a place that's furnished. Then, unless you're the first one in, you're going to get the last tenant's old junk. And in most cases, it really is junk. You know the story. Renters just don't take care of things. Not in the States, not down here in Latin America, and it's even worse down here in Latin America, believe me. No maintenance and all that, you get the idea. However, there's a huge market for used appliances down here, so you can always get a washing machine, dryer, fridge, pretty damn cheap. In other words, you don't have to buy new. In fact, almost all mom-and-pop appliance and electronic repair shops have a lot of used stuff. As soon as you walk in, you'll see it. And finally, Mr. B asks, Johnny, as far as pronouncing double L's in Spanish, a lot of words like that, he's asking, is it pronounced like a J or a Y? For example, L-L-A-M-R, which is to call. Is it pronounced llamar or llamar, or both? Nope, it's pronounced with a Y, llamar. So when you see a double L, pronounce it like a Y. By the way, these are not dumb questions. Every gringo and expat has them in his mind at one time or another. Then finally, this from Mr. B. He says, being from the ghetto myself, I didn't learn much in school, so sometimes I feel like a burden for asking people a lot of questions. Well, Mr. B, you really can't imagine what it was like 27 years ago when I first got down here. No cell phone, no internet, no blogs or gringo expat websites. And my Spanish was about a zero. Which is why on this program I try to present the things I wish I would have had access to a long, long time ago when I first came down. Okay, getting towards the end now, so I have to remind you to go to www.thenewexpat.com to sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar. This one, again, in and around Guatemala, and it kicks off in early July. Just click on the seminar link, and you'll find out all about the seminar, all the sign-up details, and about those famous pre- and post-seminar John Galt trips. And you'll also find out how to kill two birds with one stone. That is, come to the seminar at the same time, apply for temporary or permanent residency in Guatemala. One of your last chances to do that while it's still easy and cheap. Remember, Guatemala is one of the only Latin countries left where you only have to be in the country one day a year to maintain your residency. Now, for you listeners who haven't had boots on the ground yet, whether you're well along on your plan B or just toying with it, the very best way to organize yourself and get those ducks lined up right now is to go to www.expatplanb.com and sign up for my Expat Essentials course. It's been getting rave reviews, so don't miss out on that opportunity.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.